Okay, so you've had a lot of numbers. This is just one additional number to throw up. By 2025, one in four Canadians will be older than 65. The older people get, the longer they expect to work. So the basic message you've heard time and time again is that we're needing our older workers as much as we need us. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this preliminary stuff except to say that we need to adapt to a changing world, and we've been talking about the kind of conditions that are impacting on older workers. So I'm just going to skip through all of this to get to the point, get to the good stuff, right. Well, it's all the slide deck will be on everything, right? Right. Okay, so here was an interesting one to me when I was looking. Seniors are three times as likely to suffer an accidental injury leading to hospitalization, and this is Health Canada statistics. Now, this is what motivates CSA to do product standards with respect to safety, because a lot of the products that are used in our homes are subject to certification. So the interesting thing is that these kinds of accidental injuries are not the inevitable result of being older, but are the result of people designing for a different world than for seniors. So I think this is I wanted to give you some illustrations of this. For example, crash test dummies are designed to simulate an average adult male. Dummies that are modeled smaller women, larger men, infants, and children are not as common. One that's even worse is this one. When they did move to child-resistant packaging for drugs, they had a test panel made up of 18 to 45-year-old people, and here's a quote, healthy and normal with no obvious physical or mental handicaps. The testing excluded the people who were most likely to use medication, right? So what happened was the seniors had difficulty opening the packaging. So CSA had to do some backpedaling and come up with an ease of use standard. So now they include people aged 50 to 70. So from this rather sad situation came a CSA strategic advisory group. Andrew had told you that I'm on the OSH one. There's also a strategic advisory group on aging. And so this is where we're starting to see that the Aging Strategic Advisory Group was working primarily with consumer issues, consumer products and services. The same things that they're addressing need to be addressed in the OSH program. So we're now seeing a convergence of interest on behalf of the occupational health and safety programs to look at the impact of older workers. So what this means is two things. One is that we need older workers to participate in the standards development process, because if we're at the table, there's less likelihood that our needs and requirements will be overlooked. As I say that, I feel kind of silly saying it, because the other thing I notice sitting on a number of standards-related committees is that a lot of us are getting older. So we also need the new generation coming up. So if you know of anyone, regardless of your age, interested in participating in standards-related activities, we really do have a potential shortfall coming up with many of us getting close to retirement age. Okay, so 1999, the United Nations declared to be the International Year of Older Persons. So this has a lot to say to the standards bodies. ISO is the International Standardization Organization. Canadian standards bodies that are impacted are CSA and the Underwriters Laboratory of Canada, primarily in the area of occupational health and safety services. There are over 100 CSA standards that relate to occupational health and safety. And in our own Manitoba Workplace Safety and Health legislation, there are 77 standards referenced, CSA standards, ANSI standards, SAE standards. So standards are a very important part of the occupational safety and health field. So we need to make sure that those standards remain relevant to the priorities and the needs of older people. So one of the things that I wanted to touch on today is a very important guidance document called Guide 71. And this is entitled the Guidelines for Standards Developers to Address the Needs of Older Persons and Persons with Disabilities. So this is a very good guidance document which helps standards developers recognize that it is better and easier to design standards to meet a broader range of needs, right? Rather than limiting or so the idea then is to improve product safety and service safety for all people. But that needs to be broadened to include the needs of older workers. So it talks about how human abilities impact on usability of products. It talks about the relationships between accessibility and usability of products and services, and helps standards writers understand the benefits of adopting more broadly accessible design principles, because it helps from a business perspective, because it broadens your market as to who you can prepare your products for. So the application of Guide 71 is intended not only for the consumer market, but also for the workplace. And it's primarily focused on products, but it also has applicability to some degree for services. So it contains processes for helping standards developers identify the needs of older persons and people with disabilities. It has tables in it which help people to relate clauses of standards to the factors that need to be considered. It has a description of body functions or human abilities to understand the practical implications of some limitations or impairments. And it also has a very good and detailed source of guidance material that standards writers can look to. So Ben already talked about this, and I just wanted to touch on it. One of the concepts in Guide 71 is the concept of universal design. And so this refers to the development of products and services that can be used by people with a wide range of abilities and in a wide range of circumstances. So it gets us out of thinking just about the able-bodied users and gets us thinking in a more broad way. So the important thing to tell people with respect to universal design is it doesn't have to cost more, and in fact it may even create a benefit because you have broadened your aftermarket by modifying, you've got more people able to purchase and use your products. So we also talk about, in addition to universal design, which is designing for the broad range, accessible design. So this is the design of processes and products and services that meet the needs of people who do have specific limitations on their abilities. So this addresses the needs of people who do need more assistance, either from a technical or an economic basis, than would be available through through universal design. One of the examples is the computers industry, which has now got built into their operating systems the ability to change the font size, right, so that people can make it bigger if they have visual impairment. So this is just an example of not everybody's going to need that, but it's going to broaden the name, the ability of people with these kind of limitations. Now, are we there yet? No, we're not. We still need more and better research on what are the needs of people and how can they best be addressed. And so this also will include better injury surveillance data. Right now, we have a huge problem in Canada the way we keep statistics on illness and injury, because we don't have a universal collection system to be able to attribute some of the things to some of the characteristics or the and one of the things, of course, is age. So this is an area where CSA is also working on, is a standard for common injury surveillance data. We have had other standard solutions. CSA published in, this was going back to 1995, a standard on barrier-free design. And this is, again, oriented to making buildings accessible to people with physical or sensory disabilities. Andrew talked about our new standard that is a work in progress right now. We already have a guideline on workplace office ergonomics, but we are now working on a standard on general workplace ergonomics. So we are targeting a publication date of 2009. And this standard that we're working on is modeled on Z1000, which is the Occupational Health and Safety Management System standard. So it takes a similar management system approach. You're familiar with the Plan, Do, Check, Act model. So what we're trying to do is say, within your management system, you need to be able to manage the ergonomics process using the same principles. And it's rooted in five ergonomics principles, the fourth of which is the user-centered approach is a key attribute of ergonomics and considers a broad range of worker characteristics, including those with special requirements. So this is built right into the standard that we need to have this broad approach. Another standard goes back to the standard which again came out of energy efficiency, a standard on illumination systems in healthcare facilities, recognizing that there's an interest in keeping energy costs lower. However, it does permit for higher lighting levels to compensate for impaired vision, through even though it does increase energy consumption. So again, it's another reflection of this importance of considering the needs of a broad range of people. Now, I just wanted to give you a current thing that I came across in trying to prepare for this. One of the things I came across in a workplace was a pair of these safety glasses with the cheaters in them, right? You know, I find it frustrating when I go in, when I have to put these on and something else on over top. So I was quite interested in these because I, like many people, have had a shift in my ability to see. I felt very badly when my kids left home because I lost my seeing eye children. Hey, can you read this phone number for me, right? So anyway, I'm of an age, right? So one of the things that was interesting to me was this presence in the workplace of these safety glasses with the lens in them. So I went and got them, and I took a close look at them, and I found that these safety glasses that I looked at, that I'm going to show you momentarily, bore both the CSA and the ANSI Z87 mark. However, when I phoned my buddies in CSA to find out how we had adapted the standard to accommodate this, I was told we haven't. So I sent them a picture. Now you can see the little half moon circles at the bottom, right, with the glass. So I sent them a picture of these and found out in the response I got on Friday afternoon that these are not CSA approved. Even though they bear the CSA mark, they are not yet approved. So the CSA Technical Committee on Protective Eyewear now needs to look at its standard to identify the problems that would need to be addressed in order to put the CSA safety mark on these safety glasses. And the problem exists to the prismatic deviation. I'm not going to pretend I know what I'm talking about here, for the lower part of these powered lenses. So there's a part of them that has a prism. So the question that this technical committee needs to address is, should these lenses be recognized as safety glasses? Okay? So the strategy that they've evolved is to set up a task group, which is a task group now of the technical committee, headed by a guy named Dr. Ralph Chu, who is going to look at the clauses of the standard which would need to be either addressed or exempted for these particular eyewear. So stay tuned on this because it's a work in progress. Now, this I got to thinking too. I, like many of you have heard over the last couple of days, find that if I have better light, I can read better, and the larger font size is necessary for me to read better. However, one of the things that's really worrying me right now as we move to global harmonization for the chemical labeling, right, we all are anticipating that we're going to go to this international system, there is no mandatory font size on hazard warning labels in the Control Products Regulation of the Hazardous Products Act, right? Now, what's going to happen with global harmonization is we're now going to see manufacturers trying to produce product for three jurisdictions: Mexico, which requires Spanish, the United States, which requires English, and Canada, which requires English and French. So what's going to happen when we start putting three languages worth of labeling? That's one possibility. Somebody's going like this, it's going to get small. The other possibility is that the product is going to have to get bigger. We're going to have huge pails of stuff in our workplaces, right, in order to get all the labeling on it. So I think that this is something that we need to be thinking about when we start thinking about what we want to retain as control in Canada with respect to the labeling of hazardous products, right? The second thing is in our new legislation, our workplace safety and health legislation, there is a minimum of 15 decalux of light required for any workplace, part of the workplace that a worker may enter, right? But 15 decalux is kind of like a candlelight dinner, right? So I think that we really need to think about, do we need to do more on the regulatory side or on the standard side to ensure adequate lighting for workers in the workplace? So these are two of the things that I was sort of prompted to think about as I was thinking, is there a role either for standards or for regulation? So obviously our objective is to recognize that older workers are an asset and not a liability, and the employer needs to demonstrate that accommodations are going to be made in the workplace. And this is good not only for the company itself, but for our Canadian economy. Because honestly, if we're going to be collecting Canada pension when we retire, we need that next generation to keep on working to support us. And so I think as we get into this tight labor market, there are all these things converging to help us see the positive motivation of keeping workers healthy and safe in the workplace. So I've set a land speed record trying to finish this, and if you have questions, I'm available later.